Not too long ago, mainstream media used to bring truth to its audience and gave a much more unbiased opinion on world events, at least somewhat relative to today. Even if it was still completely manufactured, today it's a shell of what it was. There is no longer any facade hiding the real mechanisms pulling the strings of mainstream media. But one good thing is that people are increasingly calling them out, losing any reputation they once had. And recently, this has led to some of the most entertaining shutdowns in history, as some people have absolutely no patience for the mainstream media's nonsense. It's why celebrities now want to go on podcasts instead of the mainstream media, because they can actually talk like a human being and not be treated as just content. Now, with the mainstream media, most celebrities just put up with it because they're only there to promote their most recent projects or because their contracts require them to do it. But sometimes they just can't be bothered to keep up the charade and hate to deal with these journalists that are so politically driven. And that's when you get the most satisfying and unexpected truth bombs and shutdowns. And one actor who's famous for this kind of honesty in his interviews is Morgan Freeman. There's very few actors more iconic than him, thanks to his heavenly voice, his effortless grace, and his transcendent performances. And today, he's of course one of the most well-respected actors in Hollywood. You would think that with such a great reputation, journalists would have plenty of material to work with and so many questions about his art. But instead, interviewers just often ask him questions to confirm their own preconceptions and ideological beliefs, rather than even asking him about his own points of view. Particularly, Morgan Freeman doesn't conform to the usual opinions about race that interviewers are often fishing for, especially in the last few years with the mainstream media. In fact, he's often spoken out against these exact people and the mainstream media establishment. All the way back in 2006, Morgan Freeman would appear in 60 Minutes, and during the interview, fans were blessed with a moment that has become a lot more relevant in recent years, resurfacing everywhere online to show just how out of touch the mainstream media can be. He was asked how the world could get rid of racism, and Freeman would simply answer by saying, "Just stop talking about it."
How are we going to get rid of racism until—
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man.
Now, he wasn't saying to ignore history. He was just telling people to stop segregating African Americans from the rest of American history, particularly in regards to Black History Month. He also considers the term African American insulting, as according to the actor, it was inaccurate, saying, "What does it really mean? Most black people in this part of the world are mongrels, and you say Africa as if it's a country when it's a continent like Europe." In 2012, he then later said that he prefers black, calling it beautiful, one syllable versus seven. However, unlike some people, he also doesn't believe in it as a label. Quote, "You can't define me that way. It creates division, a division that's already gotten out of hand thanks to things like Black History Month," which Freeman openly says is ridiculous.
Black History Month you find
ridiculous?
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month?
As in Freeman's opinion, confining his history, American history, to one month is just insulting, as although this initially began as a week to remember important figures and events, he said it just became very commercialized. Plus, he claims that the history taught during Black History Month has essentially been separated from the rest of American history, and the consequences of the separation have finally started to hit home, and not in a good way. Freeman's 2014 interview with Don Lemon is the greatest indication of this. During their time together, Lemon starts talking about wealth distribution and asks the then 77-year-old if he thought race played a factor in it.
Do you think poverty is part of genetics? Answering your questions.
No, you can't say that. I don't think wealth, personally, I don't think wealth and genetics have anything to do with each other, actually. If you're born in the U.S., it really doesn't matter the condition of your birth. What matters is what you inherit from your nurturing, from your environment. Whether or not you're going, I'm just from the standpoint of having been born with little.
The question, just like the Gordon Ramsay stuff, is almost set up as bait for Freeman. It's like Lemon wants him to give an affirmative answer and go on a rant.
But it's hard to, when you say that to some people, because they say, "Oh, there you go with a pull yourself up by the bootstraps thing, and you know, you're just being respectable. Not everybody can do that."
Well, everybody can. Everybody doesn't. Courage is the key to life itself.
But the iconic actor doesn't give him the satisfaction. Instead, he stresses that people use it as an excuse not to move forward. The reporter then goes on to shift gears, trying to place blame for all his race talk on the network and insisting that he wants to move on. But based on what he's been discussing today, it's safe to bet that he wasn't being entirely truthful. Lemon does try to argue his point again and claim that not everyone can just pull themselves up, but Freeman has an eloquent bullshit ready for him. As he argues that anybody can work themselves out of a bad situation, they just need the courage to do so, giving a beautiful reminder that, quote, the bus runs every day.
People who are born in situations and say, well, I'll never get out of this, so they won't. I say to people who say, well, I would like to have done so and so and so. So, well, you could have done it. So, well, I couldn't get out of here. Man, the bus runs every day.
Morgan Freeman's shutdown stand out, not because of who he is, but because of his confidence in his assertions. And it's really just satisfying to watch him stand so staunchly against the mainstream media's agenda. And it's even more satisfying when he destroys these interviewers so hard that they don't know what to do with themselves. But before we continue, I really want to thank today's sponsor, Incogni. As you might not realize this, but every year, the number and scope of data breaches keeps on rising. In 2022 alone, the number of victims shot up by 41.5% from the previous year. There are hundreds of commercial databases and people search sites holding your personal information, and these lists grow every day. And these data brokers aggregate everything: your name, social security number, home address, online activity, and even your location history. And it's all for sale. And even worse, this could actually fall into the hands of criminals. Personally, for me, I just find that my inbox is always so clogged up with pointless junk mail. And removing yourself from the system seems like a never-ending process. In fact, on your own, this would probably take you years. And you'd actually have to keep on repeating this process because these brokers constantly collect new records. And that's where Incogni comes in. With your permission, they contact data brokers on your behalf, requesting your data's removal and handle any issues that arise. The process is completely automated, so once you sign up, they take care of everything for you. People's search sites are especially troubling in the US, where literally anyone can access detailed personal profiles online, including your address, family details, and even license plate numbers, which exposes you to a bunch of risks like scams, identity theft, and even stalking. But as Incogni conducts repeater removal requests, it means that whenever a new record pops up on a data broker site, Incogni takes care of it for you. And this is what makes their yearly subscription especially advantageous, as Incogni will continue to protect your data privacy for as long as you use their service. So make sure to use the link in the description below at incogni.com/moon. Especially those like Gordon Ramsay, who constantly has to deal with reporters trying to get a reaction out of him, acting as if he's this terrible monster villain guy that he plays up for on his TV shows. In reality, it seems like Gordon Ramsay is one of the most well-respected guys in the industry. He has a great family, is a great person to be around, hasn't let his ego take control of him, and yet just because of some of his viral moments pretending to be this outrageous chef, interviewers seem to think they can take him down like he isn't even a real person, often done just to get an emotional reaction out of the celebrity, or to maximize their views. That said, do you think the last person they tried to interview like this would be Gordon Ramsay? As anyone who watches him knows, he's a very smart guy and also very down to earth. It began in 2008 when Gordon Ramsay was first invited to Australia's Today Show. While the interview started pleasantly enough, with the host joking about Ramsay's language and the chef replying with a few sarcastic quips, things started to turn sour quickly. One of the hosts would mention Ramsay's time in America before asking about rumors that he'd gotten Botox. To his credit, he takes the question in stride. Rather than exploding at them, he jokes with them a bit, though he still asks if they're actually just stupid.
Can I just clear something up? There was a report here a couple of weeks ago saying that you'd been in the States and that you'd come back looking refreshed. Apparently you were looking quite a bit younger. They were saying that you'd had Botox. Has the US affected you like that?
Yeah, now, you're a smart girl, right? I saw you first thing this morning. Honestly, I got my 6 o'clock rise straight up. Now, do you actually think I've had Botox? Do you think I need my money back? I mean, are you stupid?
They seem to take the hint and then move on with their questions. However, the Today Show hosts aren't quite done with that line of questioning. Rather than stick around to entertain the question, Ramsay tells them to stop effing around before walking out of the shot. He does maintain his cool and keeps a smile on his face, even through these inappropriate questions. But unfortunately, this wouldn't be the last time an Australian journalist tried to anger him. A few years later, in 2010, Gordon opened a new restaurant in Australia, which was called Maze. Several journalists were invited to promote the launch, but some weren't too pleased with the quality of the food, specifically the steak. After ordering their meat well done, a chef's worst nightmare, a reviewer was upset by the dish presented to him. Rather than address the master at the restaurant, he took it to Ramsay directly. During an interview, he handed the celebrity chef a picture of the well-done steak and asked if he was proud of it. These are some brave words from a man who decided to remain faceless. Ramsay then looks understandably irritated but maintains his control. The chef had every right to step out of the interview at that moment, but instead entertained the reviewer, who wasted his question on a steak. He points out the technicalities behind a well-done steak before commenting on how poorly the reviewer had handled the situation.
How sad is this, that you asked for a steak to be cooked well done, okay? Now, whatever quality of beef it is, it's gone past any form of taste when you've cooked it well done. So you present me with a picture, God bless you, and you say, is that right? I don't eat steak well done. That's your prerogative because you're the customer. Unfortunately, you're never going to identify the quality of a beef when the steak is well cooked. So I'm really sorry to piss on your bonfire, but it's a bit of a stupid question.
Now thoroughly ticked off, Gordon leaves the interview, though not before commenting that he thought it would be an intelligent one. And if they were trying to get an explosive reaction out of him, they failed. The interviewer was doing everything he could for this to be a gotcha moment, but Ramsay ensured that didn't happen. Instead, the chef just showed how stupid the mainstream media can be. And this was over a decade ago now. But it's exactly for these sorts of reasons that podcasts and new media on YouTube is dominating the old, outdated format of mainstream media. As in the last few years, journalists have been doing everything they can to confirm their own ideas and beliefs, pushing their own agenda, and trying to enrage people just for some clicks, clumsily attacking the person they're actually meant to be just speaking to. Just like the time a trio of MSNBC presenters tried to take on Russell Brand and got more than they bargained for. In 2013, Russell Brand went to the MSNBC studio ready to promote his show, The Messiah Complex. Now, whatever you think of this guy and the recent stuff surrounding him these days, the way he handled the media here was interesting to say the least. Right from the start, the three hosts start passively insulting him, with the first host claiming she doesn't know who he is because she's not into pop culture.
All right, joining us now, he's a really big deal.
He's a big deal.
I know, I'm told this. I'm not very pop cultured, I'm sorry. Comedian, movie star, author, and host of the show Brand X, Russell Brand.
Which is not really something you want to hear from the person interviewing you. Either they're lying or they lack the most basic level of respect, or they just want to get a good reaction for the viral clip. Adding on to this only by ignoring him for longer than necessary. But he clearly understands what's happening here. So he keeps his face neutral and starts looking around the studio, acting disinterested in what the hosts have to say. They've already started to show him exactly what they think of him, and he's preparing to give them a hard time. She seems to realize her mistake and compliments Brand, and he reciprocates quickly and makes a point of establishing a rapport with her co-stars, showing that he doesn't want to have an awkward interaction here, but at the same time doesn't want to be disrespected by them just for rage views. But unfortunately, they don't understand that, and things go from bad to worse.
You look fantastic.
Yeah. That is a very kind compliment. You also look beautiful. Brian, you are free to wear whatever you want. This is one of your freedoms that is afforded to you.
I appreciate that.
Throughout the interview, it's evident that the host did very little research, if they even did any at all. The second host, ready to move things along, asked Brad the show's name and if he had the Messiah Complex himself.
I'm just going to have a drink here. Caddy K, Caddy K, question.
Messiah Complex, that's the name of your tour?
Yes.
Do you have one?
No, it's a mental illness. I hope that I'm here as a fully qualified professional gentleman.
None of us are.
Free from mental illness.
Free from it.
The comedian laughs it off and happily talks about his tour, which is the whole point of this interview.
Tell me about the tour. You're starting in Abu Dhabi. Is that where it begins?
Yeah, it's in a lot of Middle Eastern nations and South Africa and all across Europe and, of course, in your wonderful country and in our country. I'm very, very... Yeah, it's a really good tour. I'm talking about...
Now, it's very clear he's passionate about this, but the hosts really don't match his energy, instead wanting to get sound bites so that they can look better than him, or just make him perform a 30-second segment of the show like a monkey, then ask him some meaningful questions.
Can't we get, like, you know, 30 seconds now?
Well, not really, love. I mean,
Gandhi,
this is
go.
Not how it works.
It's very clear they're trying to do everything they can to get a rise out of him, but he doesn't take the bait. Instead, he just returns and mirrors their disrespect and lack of interest. Right as the male host goes to say something, he turns away to loudly address the people working behind them.
You know, it's funny, though, because I travel a lot. And
well, these people are at work, are they?
Yeah, they're working.
They're just at work.
Well, no.
Work more quietly!
This is the exact moment the hosts lose control of their show, and you can see it in their body language. They wanted a reaction, but they hadn't anticipated something like that. Their smiles are tight and fake, their laughter hardly authentic at all, and all they then do from here is give him more ammunition. The male host then tries to ask a question. He promises this will finally be serious, but all he asks is which discipline is more difficult, TV, movies, or stand-up. It was the fluffiest thing he could have asked someone like Russell Brand, and the perfect setup.
I'm gonna ask a serious question. Can I try? I'll try.
Try.
Everyone asks, what do you like better, TV, movies, or stand-up? Which one's more difficult?
Russell then goes to praise all three disciplines, but explains that he favors stand-up, particularly because he's in the room with the people. So what he says can't be misinterpreted or confused. That statement alone doesn't have too much weight to it, but in that situation, it's like the first strike in a brutal beatdown. He then continues praising stand-up because, unlike the media, people can't change information to suit their agenda and cause fake stirs.
There are challenges in all of those different disciplines. The thing I enjoy most is stand-up comedy because you're direct with your audience. You can't be misinterpreted. You know what happens if you work in media? People like to change the information so that it suits a particular agenda. If you're in a room with people, then what you're saying is clear. If you say something as a joke, people can't pretend that you're saying it seriously.
The moment the camera then flips back to the host is priceless, as they look incredibly uncomfortable about him mentioning this stuff, like they're just now realizing they've been caught out. But rather than try to fix this, they then just start digging a deeper hole for themselves. Desperate to regain control of the interview, the male host comments that he can't understand Brand when he talks on the radio, which is just another poor attempt to get under his skin. So then Russell responds that he shouldn't be listening to the radio while he's driving, as he doesn't want him to get distracted.
You know, funny, the accent, when I see him in person, it's totally fine. But on satellite radio in the car, I can't understand a single joke you say.
You can't understand it.
When I'm driving in the car and everyone's laughing in the audience of the radio, I'm like, I have no idea what he's saying.
It's best you focus on your driving, Brian. You're a man, you don't want to be distracted by humor, you might crash into a pedestrian.
Okay. So it's a good thing.
Seeing that her colleague's jab has failed, the first female host then makes her own attempt. She begins with an incredibly condescending look before turning to her co-host and talking about the comedian like he's nothing more than an exhibit for them to comment on. But still, his comments remain civil when he addresses the issue jokingly. It's a gentle correction to show they're still playing nice and that they can still turn this around if they're careful.
This is my first
brand experience.
Brand, yeah. I think it's not listening to him, it's experience. It's just sort of taking it all in.
You are talking about me as if I'm not here and as if I'm an extraterrestrial. You know, I'm from a country that's near to you.
Kind of shop window dummy. We're just sort of admiring the whole, you know, it's the whole thing, isn't it?
Well, thank you for your casual objectification.
It's an experience.
I'm glad that it's positive for you.
Staying in the realm of civility, his next hit is nothing more than a gentle tap. But it does its job. As the first female host tries to continue, he gives her an almost seductive look that rattles her. Immediately she backs into a corner, admitting she's nervous, and the second female host then takes the gloves back, ready for another round. This time she tries to get a rise out of Brand by calling him the wrong name, Willie. He again initially ignores it, letting them stumble over their words while gently correcting their refusal to talk to him directly. However, the more she insists on referring to him as Willie, the less patience he has.
Therapy. Would you do therapy with Willie Brandt?
With who?
Willie Brandt. Would you do therapy with him?
I don't think
that's where he's heading.
Okay.
Absolutely finished with them, he then goes in for the kill with a simple question, who is Willie? The effect is immediate.
I'm all right.
Yeah. You shouldn't say he when a person is present. You should refer to the person by their name. That's basic good manners.
That is where Willie is heading.
Who is Willie?
I don't...
The hosts just look embarrassed and are ready to be done with this interview. But Brand's not done with them. As they wanted a reaction out of him, now they've got it. And while they continue floundering, desperate to bring things back, he jokingly asks if this is what they do for a living before offering to help.
Okay, Russell Brand.
Is this what you all do for a living?
Yes.
Okay, but
I'm
here
professional.
Okay, well, let me help you. I'm here to promote a tour called Messiah Complex. It's here for the people of America. I want the people of America to come and see me do stand-up.
They make it out just to be a joke playing along with him, but Russell absolutely drags them down by doing their jobs better. They continue to laugh, playing like they're in on the joke, but there's genuine panic behind their eyes. None of them were prepared to get shown up quite this badly, and still, they hadn't learned their lesson. They start referring to him indirectly again, but the comedian's not having it, reminding them to call him Russell and manners.
Stop saying he, I'm present. Russell, what's wrong with your manners?
They still seem to think they have the power in the situation, and the male host makes one last attempt to undermine Brand. This time he goes for his outfit, but the comedian has no qualms about calling them out directly.
Tomorrow with a big necklace and I'm opening it.
Look beyond the superficial. That's the problem with current affairs. You forget about what's important. You allow the agenda to be decided by superficial information. What am I saying? What am I talking about? Don't think about what I'm wearing. These things are redundant, superficial.
The first host doesn't seem like she's done yet, but Brand's done with them. He shuts her down by commenting on the way she's gripping her water bottle, and whatever she had prepared to do to him is lost in her embarrassment.
Okay.
Don't be distracted. What do you think that gesture means, the way you're touching that bottle? What does that indicate? What is that? What's the subtext of that?
Remarkably, Russell did seem to maintain a relaxed, cool look throughout the interview. even though he's very well known for having a short fuse when dealing with journalists. And while it's entertaining to watch, it's more so enlightening about how bad the mainstream media really is. The sheer absurdity of the whole situation, and these weird fake hosts, is really fun just to see them implode. But sometimes these people do push too far, like ABC News did while talking with Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne is one of the most influential hip-hop artists in this generation. On the outside, he looks like just a normal rapper. However, he's proven several times that there's a lot more going on behind the facade, and that he's a genuinely clever guy. As the political landscape has become so much more hostile, people have been determined to learn celebrities' opinions on the matter. It didn't matter if they didn't know about the situations being protested, or had no real knowledge about the topic. Whatever they said was taken as gospel, as the mainstream media loves to peer pressure mainstream celebrities into saying what they want them to say, also that they can make the public believe their narratives. We saw this so much in the 2024 election, where celebrities are used as puppets just to convey a corporate hollowed-out political message. But Lil Wayne wasn't going to take the bait. In 2016, he appeared on Skip Bayless's talk show, Undisputed, alongside Shannon Sharpe. Given the racial turmoil that was growing in America during this time, the host was curious about Lil Wayne's perspective on race relations. However, his reaction wasn't what you would expect, as the rapper revealed that he'd never actually experienced racism in his then 33 years of life.
I know this is a very broad question, but where are we in the United States of America in race relations and what you see from day to day in your life?
Skip, they wouldn't want to ask me that. They wouldn't want my answer to represent it because God knows I have been nothing but blessed. My whole path, these 33 years have been nothing but a blessing. I have never dealt with racism, and I'm glad I didn't have to. I would have to say, not only did I thought it was over, I still believe it's over, but obviously, it isn't.
Shannon Sharpe then looked in disbelief at his words. While of course racism does exist in America, the fact that he said this was completely shocking for this interview. In an attempt to make him take back his words, Sharpe brought up the violence people were facing in New Orleans at the time.
But you see what's going on even in your city, New Orleans, with Alton Sterling, during Katrina, the officers that killed those and ended up in jail. So I know you say you're not paying attention to it, but you see
what's going on.
But Lil Wayne, not wanting to get swept up in some big political discussion, tries to sidestep all the divisive nature of the issue in the best way possible, as he agreed that there was an issue, but followed this up with a statement that, while simple, completely shatters the argument, by saying maybe just coming together is the solution.
As far as an opinion on what's going on, I mean, of course, we all want somebody to figure out what's going on first and then put a stop to it, or try to put a stop to it, or everybody come together and figure something out, and maybe just coming together is the solution.
Lil Wayne's slow drawl and the fact that he says it like it's the most obvious thing in the world made this such an iconic moment. He emphasized that people have differences, but coming together despite them would solve many issues. It would do a lot more good than everyone dividing themselves, letting the mainstream media constantly put people in different boxes, making an entire country so divisive at a time when it really shouldn't be. And then after that, he finished his statement by declaring that his family was all that mattered to him.
When you come to a person like me, my answer is always the same, man. My politics, my flag, my country, my nation, my world, all that is Regine, Cameron, Neil, and his brother, Tony. That's it. That's my nation. That's my flag. That's my world. That's my protest. That's my don't protest. That's my everything. That's all that matters. Those four kids to me.
So the interviewer then reminds Lil Wayne of their last conversation. According to the host, when he'd asked the rapper about the racial makeup of his crowd, he'd commented that the only black face he could see was his makeup artists.
I remember one time I saw you after you had done a concert. I think it was in Westchester, different kind of neighborhood, but I asked you what the racial breakdown was of your audience. Do you remember this? And you told me the only black face you could see in the whole audience was your makeup artist. I believe that's what you said, and she was in the front row, right? A lot of white kids love rap.
Yes.
Explain that. What does that say to you? What's the message of it? What's the bigger picture of it?
But Lil Wayne tries to get away from this conversation when he says, when he goes on stage in different cities, he doesn't see different crowds of people, he just sees his fans.
I don't want to be bashed because I don't want to sound like I'm on the wrong if there is a side, but I thought that was clearly a message that there was no such thing as racism. That's what I thought that was.
Okay.
That was a perfect example. And when I look out and I come up off the stage, when I'm coming out the bottom of the stage of my show, when I'm on tour, and I'm in my stance or whatever, and I open my eyes and I see everybody. I don't see this type of crowd or that type of, my crowd has always been everybody, thank God. And that's all I can answer for.
For him, that was enough of a sign that dividing the entire country on racial terms wasn't the best way forward. The interviewers can't believe this is really happening, trying to make him say something he doesn't want to say. But Lil Wayne then shuts them down again by telling a story about a cop who saved his life after he shot himself. At 12 years old, he tried to take his own life, and the gunshot summoned every cop in the area.
I remember reading where you say you accidentally shot yourself, but racism is real. He knows it's real, although he hasn't experienced it.
With that said, that night, that day,
yeah,
that I shot myself, the police, I was the only person in the house.
Right.
Police came through there, they knocked the doors down. I was on the floor.
Right.
They jumped over, they all hopped over me and went looking for the drugs and looking for this and that. It was a white police that came, ran up there and stopped and said, "What the, are y'all doing? Do y'all not see this baby on the floor?" And they said, "We called the ambulance. Say, "Ambulance, he has a hole in his chest." He picked me up. He brought me to the hospital himself.
And because of Lil Wayne's views here, the mainstream media absolutely pounced on him, trying to force him to take back these opinions. Like when he talked to ABC News about BLM, where he declared the movement just sounded weird to him.
There was a lot of backlash from people about that. Would you change it, what you said, or you still feel the same way? What's your thought on Black Lives Matter?
What is it? What do you mean?
The idea is that there's this movement called Black Lives Matter, thinking that the rest of America didn't seem to understand that Black Lives Matter.
It just sounds weird. I don't know that you put a name on.
The interviewer kept pushing the matter, but Lil Wayne obviously wasn't interested in this. He didn't really care about the topic, and he showed this lack of care by declaring that he felt disconnected from the protests, something that none of these journalists were expecting at all.
Do you separate yourself from it?
I don't feel connected to a damn thing that ain't got nothing to do with me. If you do, you crazy. You.
Completely done by these interviewers and being used as a puppet just to say political opinions that he didn't really care about, the rapper then angrily removed the mic, muttering that he wasn't an effing politician before walking out, which was a refreshing moment. Even with the social issue aside, it's just nice to see someone not bowing down to the peer pressure of mainstream media. And those reporting on the incident seemed almost smug about his reaction, as they had got the viral clip they were looking for, claiming they found it ridiculous that a man with such offensive language in his lyrics was offended by a simple question. But most people believe they'd missed the point of where his anger was coming from, although I think it's pretty obvious they know they were causing it. As he wasn't offended by the question, he was just annoyed that he was being used as a puppet on an issue he didn't see a point in, as he's often said that the people he cares about are his family, and that he's not qualified to give his opinions on such political matters, yet people seemed obsessed with what he had to say about it. And for Lil Wayne, this was the final straw. But nothing can compare to when Richard Iotti exposed just how awful the interview style of British mainstream media journalism really is. In 2014, the comedian appeared on Channel 4 News to discuss his new book Iotti on Iotti. If you've seen any of Gurumurti's celebrity interviews, some of which we've even mentioned on this channel before, you'll know he has a knack for angering his interviewees, especially those that are slower to act. More than anyone else in this list, he's a genius at making you get pissed off. And Richard Iotti might have been the perfect target for him, a quiet, introverted, intelligent man. And if he could get under his skin, he would get the viral clip he was always looking for. But while the clip did go viral, it didn't go viral for the reasons he expected. Now, the interview, like many of his, was a complete disaster, pretty much right from the start. Gurumurti talks around Iotti's book, unable to ever actually praise it directly due to broadcasting rules in the UK.
Now, he's a BAFTA award-winning television star and the director of two acclaimed films, but Richard Iotti is famously shy. So shy, in fact, that when he wrote his latest book, he interviewed himself.
While they can't advertise it, they can still talk about it. But Gurumurti decides to take a different direction. Instead, he starts by asking Iotti which questions he would ask himself. Twice.
Richard Iotti is here, so if you were asking yourself a question now, what would it be?
It's meant to be a jab at the comedian's book, in which he's essentially interviewing himself, but it seems to land flat.
I mean, couldn't you get anyone else to come? Perhaps that would be the question. I mean, in a way, the book's a comic book about film, really. It's not a deconstruction of the idea of interviews, particularly. Hopefully it's a container for jokes that is themed around film.
And Iotti makes the situation worse for him by responding to his questions with sarcasm and interrupting him when he tries to ask the same question a second time.
What would you then ask yourself?
You know, the 2,000-year-old man that Mel Brooks played wasn't actually 2,000 years old.
Really?
He was still Mel Brooks. Okay. It's not possible to be 2,000-year-old. He was kind of joking.
It's a satisfying little moment, and for a second, it seems like things are actually going well. But then as the interviewer is taken aback by Odie's bluntness, he tries to continue this interview in a serious way. His new strategy was to comment on the broadcasting rules in the UK.
In an interview like this, I ask you a few questions about your book.
Yes.
Because that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to promote your book because of broadcasting rules.
And the two men then make a few light jabs back at each other, seeming to actually be in agreement. Gurumurthy then jokes that their inability to discuss his book means he'll have to ask a serious question.
Cool. So I then ask you something serious.
Yes.
Now, the serious thing I'd like to ask...
Which I will parry.
Unfortunately, Gurumurthy ruins the moment by using it to segue into a question about diversity issues.
You're the son of a Nigerian and a Norwegian.
Yes,
another one. Which is quite unusual. And I wonder, do you feel a very strong sense of being a role model for British Norwegians?
Now, trying to force in a political message here was a terrible mistake, and Richard Ayoade's expression doesn't change much throughout the interview. But for a second when this happens, he actually seems annoyed with the line of question, as anybody would. In a blog post after the interview, Gurumurthy revealed that he was hoping Ayoade would say something real about diversity. But Ayoade wasn't taking the bait here. He wasn't going to virtue signal, and he wasn't going to be a puppet for the mainstream media. Instead, the comedian just gives him deadpan answers, and then jokes about his parents' respective countries of origin.
I do, and I feel that Norway as a nation looks to me and my activities in many ways to marshal any kind of policies that they can drum up, and have been doing so for a while. In fact, they're starting to send me the Christmas tree rather than directly to Trafalgar, but they just send it to me now.
Gurumurthy then tries to ask another question about diversity, but Ayoade just holds up a finger, ready to make a point of his own and take the interview away from the topic he doesn't want to discuss.
Because I don't dislike interviews, it's a bit more like, it's like commuting. I accept it as a part of this, but no one, you know, loves it with all, you know, but it's fine.
Well, I get that, but give me something, in return.
It's such a simple moment, but it's great in its finality and shuts down Gurumurthy's attempts to keep this narrative going on, as nobody wants this, neither the audience nor Richard Ayoade. And while the journalist tries to control this interview, Ayoade doesn't let him and keeps turning the questions back on him.
But you're not going there, you know, while there's this massive campaign
Well,
no, what I mean is, you know Lenny Henry and David Harewood and all those people black people in the entertainment industry.
There are others, yeah.
Have been pushing this big campaign about diversity in television.
Yes.
And you're not going to go there as a subject.
How do you mean go there as a subject?
Well, do you
go there as a subject?
I do, personally,
where are
yes.
You? Where are
I
you?
I think there
this?
Should be more, but now you're interviewing me.
The whole interview is made all the more satisfying with Ayoade's last line.
But Richard, thank you very much indeed for coming.
Don't thank me. I've done nothing for you.
John.
It's such a cold, clean statement, it's almost jarring in its delivery, being the perfect exit to a disastrous, pointless interview. Now, watching these guys shut down mainstream media will always be satisfying to watch, and as we go deeper into 2025, it seems like nobody today even trusts the mainstream media. After a decade of all this pointless stuff, and people like these guys exposing them live on TV, has really helped to erode all trust in the mainstream media's narratives, as nobody cares what these journalists have to think anymore. And by shutting down these targeted virtue-signaling questions, they're encouraging people to actually question the integrity of the sources they get their information from, and question the narratives that have been shoved down our throats for so long.